Hello, Spacers. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt, and it's our 100th episode. And we're not doing anything special for it, so that's great. Not to say that our guests aren't special. Joining me today is Simon St. Laurent, content producer at Lynda.com, and Chris Enns, our producer extraordinaire and host of his own show, Show Me Your Mic podcast. And rather than spending some time looking back at some lame clip show, going over our last 99 episodes, we'll do that another time, probably. We'll just catch up on some recent stories and headlines, and just catch up with some old friends. How about that? Sounds good, huh? Before we get started, some notes on where I'll be and some words from our sponsors. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Teleject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. That's Christopher Schmidt is on Twitter at Teleject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. I'll be emceeing the SaaS Summit, which is a full-day virtual front-end UX design conference. You can attend online, on your mobile device, at your desktop, wherever you are in the world, as long as you have a decent internet connection, on December 14th. You get free recordings when you register at sassummit.com. It's going to be something great. We're talking about design systems. We're talking about topography, responsive topography. We're talking about living with web animations as a style guide, just accessibility, just a whole lot of great stuff. So definitely check it out. Also, set it and forget it with a non-breaking space show newsletter. So whenever a new show comes out, just get notified right away with an email in your inbox. And it's awesome. Just say, hey, new show. Let's go take a listen to it. Go to newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv to sign up. As always, for the show that you're about to listen to, you can find the notes and links at nonbreakingspace.tv. As always, thank you for subscribing, commenting, liking, and telling others about the Nonbreaking Space show on iTunes. Now, on with the show. 100. Oh yeah, but I will say, so we have with us Chris Enns.
Hello, sorry.
There you go. Thank you. Hello, Chris Enns. Hello. And then Simon St. Laurent.
Hi there.
Okay. And this is our, I guess, our unofficial 100th episode that we're recording. So,
ooh.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. So usually I have this, like Chris knows this pretty well. I usually have these elaborate plans for a special episode. It's like, it's a winter celebration. We'll just get this massive, you know, we'll license a song and, you know, a heavy metal Christmas song, and we'll just do something really cool. We'll get some, like, you know, outtakes of the year. And the 100th episode came along. I was just like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. I was just like, but hey, I'll just invite Chris and Simon, who I love talking to, and I'll just, like, we'll just chat and see what's up going on in the industry. And I feel like that's nothing better than what I would like to do. So here we are, 100 episodes in. We've clearly changed the world for better. Anything new with you guys at all?
Winter has arrived and then left, and fall is back, and then I think winter's coming again. So we're kind of on a Game of Thrones loop here.
Wow. Yeah, we had snow yesterday morning, but it's gone, and tomorrow's supposed to be like 65. So it's pretend.
Okay. Yeah, because it's still like 8 degrees in Austin, Texas. And then we're flying out to New York City next week just for like a quick work vacation type of thing, just for a couple of days. And then just like it's snowing or something out there. I'm like, oh.
It won't really be snowing.
I just want it to be like 70s. That's okay. I don't want to be too cold. So.
Actually, my favorite times in New York are when a snowstorm shuts down the city. It gets really nice.
Oh really? What?
Yes.
No one's out. Is everyone outside just having a good time, or is it just
pretty much? Yeah. There's not much else you can do, and the subway still works. So you know, well, to a certain point, they do anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh man. Okay. Well, yeah. Looking forward to hopefully. I'm not looking forward to subways. I tell you that much right now. So, but cool.
looking for a good time there. And then, I saw the snow that you took a photo of, and I immediately thought, like, I can't wait for your ice sculptures. So
yes, the ice lanterns will come out as soon as I have a stretch of weather below 20 degrees. I don't think I'm going to have that for a couple months. So that's okay.
I don't think so either. I was like, I didn't want to email you either. Like, hey, I saw your phone.
Oh, a bunch of people did already.
I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah, no.
Is there like a crowdfunding way we can support more ice sculptures or something?
Well, mine are pretty simple. I just have these molds that I put water in and I leave them outside to freeze. And they make nice candle things, and I put a votive candle in them, and they make awesome photos. It's like the world's easiest photography. Take 10 shots of an ice lantern, and you will get something worth looking at for more than a few seconds.
Well, so, life hacks, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let's go through the top news stories. First one up is Vine is, quote, discontinuing the mobile app. I guess Twitter owned Vine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've never really got into Vine that much. I mean, I did try to experiment when it came out. I think Chris is probably like the Snapchat expert between us three. So like, what is your hot take on
Vine? Well, I was kind of like you guys seem to be when the news broke that it was discontinuing or they were shutting it down or whatever. Yeah. I was kind of like, eh. But then last night, actually, I started going back through the Vines I had posted over the years. And it has been 2 or 3 years, I think, since Twitter bought it. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised, actually, how much stuff I had. And then also just, you know, with a family, kids that I've posted over the years. So I started retweeting or Vining, whatever, those on Twitter, just as most people were doing yesterday and today, just kind of remembering what Vine was to us all. And I was surprised actually how it was kind of just a fun way to see old stuff. And I mean, there's ways now to do similar things, you know, Snapchat and live photos and whatever that Apple's done and stuff. But there is something interesting about that platform that I think will be lost. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to replicate, I guess, if, you know, Instagram mm-hmm. or whatever decides to do something similar. But obviously Twitter felt like, if Disney wasn't going to buy them, they might as well shut down Vine. It seems like
they're right.
it seems apropos, like, well, if Disney's going to buy us, we'll just cut off our hand over here.
Yeah.
Disney makes a lot of video, therefore we'll shut down our videos thing.
We can't tell Disney how to make money off of our Vine subscription. So therefore they're not interested in our Vine service at all. So, but also Disney is, you know, has a member of Apple on its board. So I don't understand. It has to be a really compelling case for Disney to buy Twitter, right? Like, yeah, they can just walk over to Apple, you know, like, you know, to say, hey, build us this thing. And not that Apple has any track record of being a successful social media outlet, but it's like, so it's just, they could still leverage. I can see them going to Apple first before they go to
Twitter. I'll admit to being confused. Like, I'm not sure who would really want Twitter, why it would be useful to them. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I love it kind of as a public service almost, but they've had a hard time figuring out how to make money on it. I'm not sure anybody else can. Right. How do we keep this thing alive?
It's kind of like the utilities in Monopoly where you're like, they're good.
Yeah.
Somebody has to own them, but nobody's really like seeking or hoping they end up with the utilities on Monopoly.
Yeah. Well, they get better if you own all of them, but yeah.
So that's killing Vine, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought, like, you know, they just open up pro accounts to people who just, you can apply for them. And I wouldn't have minded paying $25 or maybe $25 a year to update my pro status if I got one every year, just so I could say, hey, I'm legit. You know, I know what I'm doing on the service, and I have some authority on the social media platform, and I would love the same thing if I were on Snapchat, right, or something like that. Like, if I had some weight on that. So I felt like they should have just done that earlier and just had like a pro account there, and then added features like not like too complex filtering, but some basic filtering to filter out the trolls, maybe, or to filter out, you know, your top 10 trolls. I don't know, whatever. But they've kept your top 10. But sorry, Jimmy, you reach your limit on trolls. You just really stop annoying people to me. Yeah, so I just feel like it's there's plenty of ways for them to do that. But also, I feel like, you know, there's also the flip side is that people who are on Twitter have to be anonymous. But I feel like with Age of Bitcoin and, you know, people can donate a pro account for someone else. You know, I think, yeah, they could still be anonymous and have a Twitter account too, some way. But I just feel like they kind of missed that boat a little bit. But I think Google should still buy them in a heartbeat because I think they need people searching for up-to-the-minute news. And that's why I feel like whenever something newsworthy happens within a city or a state or a nation or international, you know, Twitter's where I go to for news. So I think.
What about like the idea of like why wouldn't Facebook buy them, which seems like they're competitors, but like Facebook just runs it as its like quick instant messaging live chat thing, but then there's also Facebook proper that you go to for like sharing cat photos and pictures of your kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they could benefit from having the, you know, the goodwill of the nerd community on Twitter, let's say, while also getting the rest of the world potentially on Facebook.com and run the board, I guess. I don't
know. I kind of wonder if that's maybe a step too far, even in our toothless antitrust world that actually like, cause when I think of social networks, I absolutely think of Facebook and Twitter first. Mm-hmm. And that would be a shrinkage. I work for LinkedIn, which is the other one that comes to mind, but like in a different zone. Mm-hmm. I don't know that combining any of those three with the others. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not saying I would like it either. I just mean like Monopoly, you know, just like who is it? Time Warner's buying whichever. I forget which.
AT&T is buying Time Warner. Yeah.
Whichever.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Sort of the idea of like utilities buying the other utilities and monopolizing the whole thing. And
we started with that Monopoly game. You're right. That was a good metaphor. Yeah. I heard a rumor that Vine was shutting down because it had too many videos of dancing Chewbaccas on it.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's all Christopher's fault.
Yeah. That was a good moment. I was like, I don't dance in Chewbacca outfits often.
When you do, it's on Vine.
It's on Vine. So, but yeah, that was a good day because the backstory for these people don't know is like, not that people care, but it's just like is that Cindy Lee who's like first wave or is of web developers, or whatever. So, she made her own Padme outfit from Star Wars One, Phantom Menace, and that's before the internet had outfits or like dimensions on how to make outfits like that. She made it all by like eyeballing the TV show. And so, and it's just this elaborate outfit. So it was really beautiful. It's the one in the movie Phantom Menace where it's a red outfit with glowing orbs on the bottom of the dress. I don't know, whatever that is. And so, I begged her to like take it to Comic-Con in San Diego, forever. And so she finally broke down and said like, oh, I would only do it if we all wore outfits. So Ari was in Princess Leia. I was in Chewbacca, and her husband was in Anakin Skywalker, Jedi. Mm. So we actually we got in early in the line for Comic-Con, dressed up. I was 6'7", you know, Chewbacca, you know, and I can't hardly see anything. And we walked through. I think we literally walked 100 feet. And then I had to walk back out because we couldn't go anywhere without people taking a photo of us. And that took like literally like 3 or 4 hours of us doing that. And so where you see a photo of me dancing, we'll put in the notes, whatever. We just did it. We accomplished this goal of like, we got costumes, totally nerded out and walked through Comic-Con. So that was like the happiest moment. Like, well, I accomplished life bucket goal, you know.
And Vine preserved it.
Yeah. You know, for the next like 2 months, right?
Right.
Don't take it down. Right. Next story, Apple's new MacBook pros and cons. But so it took them 4 years to come up with a new MacBook Pro, right? Because everyone was complaining like, hey, you have a new iPhone, you have new this, we're doing that. And then meanwhile, what do you guys think of it, new MacBook Pro?
I think it feels like a lot of the review and response I've seen anyways has been kind of negative. I haven't seen one in person. I haven't touched one. Obviously, I wasn't that invited to the Apple event, surprisingly. But I'm skeptical. I think it could be one of those things, like the little touch bar thing could be one of those things that's neat once you actually see it in person, you use it. To me, it looked a little gimmicky and kind of reminded me of old like 90s style laptops where there's like buttons all over and shortcut keys and, you know, just that kind of thing redone and admittedly well, you know, done, redone well. But at, yeah, it felt, feels a bit like I'm already looking up at my screen. I don't want to have to, and I can type and act, you know, find my mouse without having to look down at stuff. Whereas that feels like there's no pressure, no sensitivity to anything. And so you're just going to be basically looking down all the time to try and find stuff. But I'm willing to be proven wrong, I guess. I'm just skeptical that it seems like to have spent that long basically putting a mini iPad or whatever in your keyboard. And that's the big reveal. I don't know. I'm underwhelmed, I guess. But
yeah, I think it'll have a web API for the touch bar that's based on the marquee tag. And it just makes things scroll back and forth.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I saw the blink tag is getting resurrected too, probably.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of stepping away from Apple for the last 5 years, so I'm basically the wrong person to ask about enthusiasm. But I mean, I am talking to you on a PowerBook.
Wow.
Right. That would be great. I am talking to you on a MacBook, but that's because my employer handed it to me, and I was trying to speak to you from an HP Sprout so I could show off just how weird and awesome Windows can be. But, you know, that didn't work out. So. Yeah, I'm kind of weirded out. I mean, I've watched for years as like it just was always the same laptop. My parents asked at one point if they should upgrade, and I like checked out the specs of my mother's old MacBook and the new MacBook, and I was like, is something desperately wrong with the old one? No, don't move at all. Just stay. It's been very weird to me. I mean, partly because I still have them for work, I'm less and less enthusiastic about Mac OS as well. I kind of feel like somehow Windows got around them with that whole Ubuntu bash shell thing now. And so all of my development needs are now like no longer need a Mac. I don't see anything exciting there. I alternate between being a total Apple fanboy and totally wishing they'd go away. And I'm definitely deep in the go away phase right now.
Yeah, it seems like for better or worse, I think Microsoft learned a lesson from Apple, mm-hmm. and they've took it to heart. And Microsoft is now a better Apple than Apple was. So I don't know. My concern is I'm not too worried about that touchscreen. It's a screen where the function keys used to be, if you will, air quotes used to be. And so they still replaced it. The escape key is now this virtual, you know, a touch key now and stuff. My thing is like, I think this is just a step towards replacing the whole keyboard with like an iPad interface. Like just like you have a nice, so you have glass on glass, so you fold it up. And I feel that's like where it's going. It's like, so you'll be just typing on glass. Because, you know, you have the iOS keyboard already, so you just, you know, it's...
And MacBook keyboards have been terrible for a long time, so maybe that would even be an improvement.
Yeah, I mean, and they even touted, like, their new scissored, like, keyboard keys that they made another generation cut, which is, like, 4 years, you know, they improved the keyboard.
Right!
After 4 years, like, thank you, I guess, for 4 years of that, and thank you for this power strip of... LED lights. So, I'm kind of interested to see how it plays. Maybe it plays better in person. But the thing that really that kind of got me was that the power cord is now USB-C, like, cord. And so there's actually four, depending on which app, I think depending on which laptop you get two or four or three or USB-C outlets for your power. So they got rid of their MagSafe power outlet, which is like just ingenious thing where, like, you know, if your power gets cut, you know, your cord doesn't fray or whatnot. So I felt like they kind of took a step backwards with that. Even this past week, you know, with dealing with the conference, you know, the power cord got snapped so many times. Mm-hmm. You know, you're on a podium, you don't know how long, you know, it just, you know, or you're going to set up for the next day, you just don't know. And the power cord just snapped and frayed and had to buy a new one. And so I felt like that was a really stepping backwards really for them. And so and I sort of feel like this is a laptop they need to redesign within 6-8 months. They can't wait. They can't wait 4 years on this one.
I think my big concern is I don't think they're really good at listening anymore. So, I mean, not that they ever especially were, but they, you know, kind of sort of did. They did strange things. Like people would ask for something like a netbook and they gave us the iPad. Okay. There was a plan there, but this doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. I saw a report that you can't just, it's funny that, that nerds would ask this, but like you cannot plug four power adapters into an USB-C port and like charge four times as fast. It doesn't work that way. But yeah, it does feel like I saw someone say something about like where they're not really aiming for the professional user. They're sort of aiming for the amateur professional who's wowed by this kind of thing. And I do feel like, yeah, like Simon said, like they're sort of missing where it feels like the industry is going, whether you're in the creative side or the programmer side or development side. Like they're kind of not really aiming, following either of those paths and kind of hitting nobody now. Whereas it did feel like for years they were like one step ahead of where people were going to be. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like people are going to be stepping in this direction. Like I know the next story is the Microsoft Surface. Like that feels like, at least on the creative side, where folks want this to go. Like we want the big iPad, but like on a desk thing that I can use, that's not flat on the table, but somehow, so it's easier to like draw on or manipulate stuff with, where this is like, well, sure, I can have a little touch controls for the, say, scrubbing in a video if I'm a Final Cut Pro editor.
Right.
But really, like, the Magic Trackpad should be just as good, and then I don't have to try and navigate, like I was saying, like, look down and figure out where my hand is on the...
There's, like, two points. Like, one, I felt like, you know, Microsoft's been beating up Apple on the commercials, saying, like, you could touch our tablet, and it's way better than the laptop. And I was like, hey, we'll just wait until Apple comes out with their new laptop. It's been 4 years. And then I like, because like, you know, Microsoft and Samsung can like usually compete on hardware, but it usually takes a while for Apple to catch up. And this is the first time I saw like, okay, Apple's going to come out ready for the Christmas market and just go just punch it out with something cool. And I was like, it was a total like failure on their part to do that. But I thought like maybe they see something with a pencil, right? The Apple Pencil, where it's just a gorgeous tool. I love the tool. I, however, lose that thing all the time. You know, and then also the user interface, and also I use it, but then maybe it's not really designed for being used very well because of the, I'm not sure you remember all the charging of how to charge a pencil. You stick into the iPad and it looks like an iPad popsicle, whatever. Like, so, and right. It's, so I just, maybe they're just not down with like this, these kind of external devices outside of the iPad or the iPhone or the MacBook or the laptop. Maybe they're just like, they want it all.
You
just buy the device and you shouldn't own anything else other than these like three devices or whatnot. Well, so
there were kind of two responses to the keyboard stuff that I thought were interesting. One is that my kids are perpetually confused by the MacBooks we have because it's not a touchscreen and they're the only things in the house that aren't. So they're always like, and one of them has a broken piece of glass on it, which we would care about if it was a touchscreen, but we haven't fixed yet because it's not. So there's that. And then the other was the video editors I was talking to who were like, yeah, I guess I could use that strip for video, but my laptop's always closed when I'm editing video.
Yeah.
So for them, it's like, never mind. If I'm doing video work on an airplane, maybe.
Yeah. And it's, there's the potential, I guess, this is where I always give Apple the benefit of the doubt, I guess, in the long run, because maybe there is a bigger vision here, you know, like we've seen in the past where they've sort of planted the seeds of something and then it actually isn't ready right now. So they have to sort of put out a stopgap like this is maybe, but it feels like you said, Christopher, like they're building towards just the iPad on where your keyboard is. And that's, to me, isn't really exciting either. Yeah.
I think that's way exciting for me because then your keyboard display can be even more context sensitive. Like, I mean, the whole idea behind that function strip is now you have a context sensitive menu, right? And so where these function keys are probably like for the casual user, like the target audience that Apple is going for doesn't really hit the function keys that often. You know, I hardly hit the function keys, you know, that often. And, you know, I'm probably a prime example of someone who would benefit from, you know, changing my daylights, you know, my screen lightness and brightness and, you know, changing songs quickly and all that stuff. But I don't change, it's not that very often, but I think like, if you think about if it takes over the whole entire keyboard, you know, just think about the keyboard that you get with your iPhone, how that changes when you want to enter a phone number and then the numbers come up instead of like mm-hmm. Roman alphabet or whatever. And so it's really easy just then to have like, another example would be like, there's all these plasticky keyboards that are color coded for video editing that you can buy off of Amazon, whatever, and you layer that on top of your keyboard. Well, if that was just like baked in to the OS, where you're just like, I'm now in editing mode. Here's all the hotkeys, color coded just for me to run around easily, and I don't have to worry about, you know, scissor keys like failing on me or whatever like that. So it's pretty. I think that's a lot of cool things to go in a cool direction. I did not buy the DJ example though. That was pretty bad for that little like thumb strip. I thought that was like let's throw out the DJ and.
That's where you can see him like sort of like very precisely trying to make sure. I mean, he's on stage at an Apple event with millions of people watching. So there's pressure, obviously. But even still, you could see him like very carefully trying to make sure he's hitting the right part of the little touchpad thing or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think he would really prefer to have an iPad for that anyway. So it's just kind of.
That's what it felt a bit like after all this time of like even Tim Cook saying, why would you want to buy an iPad when you can or buy a Mac or buy a computer? He said, I think PC or whatever, when you could buy an iPad. And it's like, this seems to be a good use case for an iPad.
But, yeah. Oh, well, maybe a pro version. Yeah. All right. Well, so that leads us into the new Surface from Microsoft. So like we kind of talked to it already, but it's this big honking monitor. I don't know what the dimensions are. I just thought it was like huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminded me of the Surface table that went around.
That was at
South by Southwest. It was this huge thing. I saw it at the Microsoft Build conference way back in the day too. You know, it was before the iPad came out. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh my gosh. It was pretty much like the coup d'etat. I thought like Apple just ran rings around Microsoft back then. It was just like, oh, you have this big ping pong set. That's great. Here's a tablet. But it's a big tablet on a desktop computer. You can run it as Windows OS from the looks of it, and then you can interact with it and dive into it as an illustrator or creative person. So, so what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm really excited about it. I think I was just trying to see if it was. I don't know if it's listed on the Canadian side. I'm always conscious about Canadian pricing versus U.S. pricing up here in the north. But I think.
Well, I checked it out in American dollars. It's like $4,000 for like. The upscale version of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be $5,000 Canadian or whatever, roughly, by the time it gets across the border. But so it's not something I'm going to be buying anytime soon. I'm sitting in front of a relatively new iMac that'll do me just fine. But I think as a technology piece, especially as a counterpoint to what Apple announced and stuff, it certainly makes for, not that they're direct competitors exactly, but it certainly is kind of like, you know, like you said, in years past, it would have been Microsoft announcing something. And then the next day, Apple would be like blowing them out of the water. So all the headlines would be about Apple and we wouldn't even remember what Microsoft announced often. And so this feels like the reverse, although Apple has a lot of, you know, just press notoriety, I think, regardless right now, but that can fade just like it did with Microsoft. And so just looking at it, at the demos and stuff, it certainly feels like a really compelling thing, especially for the creative side. I've seen some reviews saying that it's, you know, the software's still buggy in the, you know, the little dial thing that you can sort of drop on the screen and use to like control color temperature and stuff like that, which looks really cool in demo, but you know, isn't as slick or smooth in reality yet. But again, potentially could get by the time it's released in, what is it, November? I forget when it's coming out, but it's in the stores anyways for demo purpose. I don't know if you can take one home yet, but so I think there's definitely, it's really interesting. If I was at all graphically inclined, it would be something really interesting. And I think I read a review, Penny Arcade guy, Gabe something, the guy, one of the artists there with Penny Arcade, the comic, has had one for about a week or two and seems to really like it and think it's definitely an interesting way to go with this. So I'm excited. I think competition for Apple is good. And in this space, doing interesting things is good and can only be sort of good times ahead, I guess, for us tech nerds in this space.
I don't know. I'm kind of afraid for Apple in competition. I don't think they do too well in competition. I think they're great when they sit, when they're laser focused on a star that no one else sees. And only until we realize like, oh yeah, that's where we should be going. That's where.
Right.
So I don't know.
I think we've been stuck in this place where kind of everybody was following Apple for the last however many years. I mean, the iMac came out and suddenly everybody was making all-in-ones. The iPad came out and suddenly like Well, okay, there were Windows tablets before the iPad, but it changed the conversation. I don't know. I'm one of those strange people who actually likes computers that aren't laptops. And so I've been hoping that something would change in this space and kind of seeing like Apple and the iMac is like this endless barrier. So I'm the one of five crazy people who actually paid for an HP Sprout, which I'm happy to say was only about half as much as this as the fancy version of the Surface. But you know, that gave me two screens and touch screens. It gave me weird things I could do with Adobe and Microsoft products. It doesn't have a fancy dial or anything. But somehow we got stuck in like 1999 on the desktop and things just didn't change forever, even as everything else moved. So it's a little weird to me actually that it's Microsoft doing this. Although honestly, with the Sprout, I've seen the problems that happen when the manufacturer of the computer and the creator of the operating system are different people. That's kind of a headache. So I think Microsoft has a big advantage here. I guess I should also disclose that I work for lynda.com, which is part of LinkedIn, which is probably about to get swallowed by Microsoft. So I guess who knows? It's all weird. But to me, it's like, there's this stuff that we should have been doing for the last 15 years to make computers more interesting and interactive. And about the main thing we got around to was putting a touchscreen on some of them. So, you know, to me, this is like finally taking some of the ideas we've had in the last 20 years, some of the ideas we've had in the last 50 years, to be honest. I suspect that like, the folks at Xerox PARC are laughing somewhere right now, but that's okay. Yeah, I feel like it's finally coming together. I don't actually care very much who does it. I'm just like happy to see the ice breaking and that, you know, we can look to different interfaces than classic keyboard and monitor and mouse.
Yeah, I definitely step away from the beige box and keyboard and computer screen. Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah, so I like, that's one of the things I do like about Microsoft Studio, you know, is that Surface Studio it's relatively light, it's springy, it has a little the dial interface that I assume other computer software applications will be able to latch on and do their own interface.
I think there's some doubts about the dial. I bought one of those Griffin Technologies dials when they came out, I don't know, 2001 for the Mac, and it seemed awesome for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, but you can actually place it on the screen now.
And that's true. That's true.
Which, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, like Microsoft has had touchscreens before, and in a previous life, you know, I actually bought like a bunch of those laptop folding screens before the iPad was even like a whisper. And you know, I was kind of sort of impressed with it. You know, I could draw on it. It could recognize my handwriting, which is great because it was terrible handwriting. And it was just it wasn't half bad, but it was still like 2005 technology, right? It was still.
I did like the ping pong table. I was much more comfortable putting my beer down on that than I am with most computers. So that was
that's the beer analogy, right? Like I can only buy and hang out with a computer if I can put a beer on it.
Right. I don't know about the Surface Studio for that. We'll have to see if it has a cup holder.
I will accept you as a robot overlord if I could put a beer on you and hang out.
The studio, I think, from what I see, it only goes, like, it doesn't go completely flush with the table, right? It goes almost flush, I think. So, yeah, your beer will slide down.
Okay, well, let's figure this out.
That's not a challenge. That's a challenge to undertake. Yeah. That's a Kickstarter waiting to happen.
Studio cup holders.
You're drawing all weekend. You need some help making deadlines. Sure.
Joni Ive is paying attention right now, back in the studio.
Okay, guys, bear me. Yeah.
I do think the little dial thing, I think just like the Apple touchpad, if you will, I think that's what it's called, will be one of those things that when you see it, it'll either be amazing or it'll be, like you said, sort of like the other dials of the past, where it's like, why would I do that when I can just actually touch the screen and, you know, or whatever, have to go find this thing, forget where I put it and stuff like that. Right. So.
Yeah, and I feel like Adobe's, I think it was Adobe's Bridge and Ruler, I think, were great devices. However, I don't use them, you know, and that's because I'm not really bought into the whole Adobe ecosystem. However, if I was able to, you know, I can use a pencil for Apple's pencil for other apps besides Apple's apps. It's really great, and I love it. And it has a great way to do it. So I feel like if that dial can interface with other apps, I could just see myself engrossed into the computer, making art, making creative stuff. And I think it's just going to be more of a, you know, our platform, our, you know, nation is really going to be about people making stuff and creating stuff now and via computers now. I just feel like we have to get more engrossed in making cooler stuff that way. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I'm excited about the dial. I'm putting on record for that. That's just me.
I want to see the web API for it. Then I'll talk about it.
Okay. So, next on the list is CSS DevConf superpowers. I did not write that, I don't think.
That was me.
Okay, so what was your...
That show made me happier than most of the ones I've been to that I can remember. I got extra excited last night when I realized the shirt was glow in the dark. So that was extra awesome. But yeah, I feel like we're coming up to a kind of a turning point. Like I was just talking about how the ice is breaking on like desktop design stuff. I think we're actually coming to a point where like there is so much new stuff in CSS that over the next like 2 or 3 years, we're not going to be able to help ourselves in coming up with new ways to use it. There was
what do you mean?
Like figuring out new designs, like finding different ways to create interfaces, like figuring out ways to make stuff that look really nice on that Surface Studio in ways that the people who built it in the first place didn't think about. Only if we get the dial API, of course. But you know, like there was a comment I think Jen Simmons made about how like in CSS, because everything floats, you sort of get this like model of everything kind of plastered to the top. And ever since she said that, I've been looking around and going, oh, it's all true. And,
yeah, I think your analogy was, floats. It's like, if you think of a bathtub,
bars of soap. Yeah.
Bars of soap all floating to the top. That's like,
yeah, this ivory 99 4/400% pure thing. It's yeah. So, you know, I've been watching CSS forever. I've been using it since it came out. I've always had a soft spot for it, but it's always felt like it moved really slowly. It moved in ways that made programmers just go, what? I don't understand. That doesn't look like a Java Swing interface. That's not Visual Studio. I think we actually kind of are breaking out of those lines finally. So I'm watching for what I'm calling a CSS renaissance now. We'll see if this actually happens. It's entirely possible I'm crazy. We do have a bunch of programmers who are like trying to blow up the cascade and start over because global variables are bad or something. I'm also actually really happy to see like CSS containment coming out. So you can finally say, turn off the cascade here, please. Thank you. It just feels like a moment. We're not there yet. I feel a little weird calling it ahead, but I'm a little too excited not to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like everything's going towards a modular system, right? It's like you're like, you want to stop the cascade at this point, and you want to have like, you want to build, people want to share building blocks, but they don't want to have it interfere with other people's CSS.
Yeah, so I think the idea of the cascade being completely global is part of the problem. So there is that interference problem, which is actually not that hard to avoid through creative naming, but creative naming does get exhausting. But I think the other thing for me that's shifting is that I'm hoping that being able to build components, being able to like contain the scope will make people appreciate like what this stuff does for them in those smaller contexts finally. I don't know. The programmer designer divide is really, really, really wide on CSS. 2 years ago, it was kind of the divide between people who are making new things and the people who have to maintain things that was leading to the occasional fight. These days, it seems much more clearly like programmers versus designers in ways that don't make sense to me. So I'm hoping this renaissance will make everybody happy. We'll see.
Like there was some discussion about at the CSDevConf about the divide between programmers and designers, and I just I don't know where it was, but I just I'm still kind of like, I didn't say much about it because I was still kind of down about it the whole discussion, because as a conference organizer, there's still like a divide, you know, out there. Mm-hmm. That and we try to put designers and programmers on the same track, and if we can avoid it, we do. It's just because the feedback we get is, you know, designers want to design, they don't want to code. And it was just kind of you know, that's not where things are going. So
yeah, it was a great show. It like pulled together all of these threads that like I've been watching forever, but hadn't really seen in one place in a long time. It was too damn hot outside, but you know, other than that, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was like a week earlier, it was perfect.
It does seem like, speaking as the someone who doesn't know how to do a lot of stuff with things, the people I follow, like the, I'm just looking through the speakers and stuff. I wasn't, for anybody listening, I wasn't at CSS.conf. My invitation lost, I guess. No, but the folks I follow, the Coyers and stuff, they seem like that, the type of people that you're describing, like the leading, where they are designers. They're not like necessarily amazing designers, but they're really good programmers, or they're pretty good program. What was the opposite? They're pretty good programmers and amazing designers, I guess. But they do, like a lot of the leaders of people that I follow, as someone who's, you know, works at a local level with clients on websites and WordPress and whatever. And, you know, kind of like I'm 2 years down the road from where you guys maybe are, or people at the CSS DevConf are talking, in terms of what my clients are actually going to come saying, hey, can we have animations now in, you know, a year from now or whatever? And then I'll have to figure that out. But yeah, a lot of, it's exciting, I guess, to see sort of like what Simon was saying, that the people I follow anyways are bridging that divide, I guess, in a healthy way, and feel like they're multidisciplinary kind of artists, creative programmer, able to communicate with all sides of their brain, not just one track. It looks exciting from down here, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's also kind of has a weird echo in like what we were just saying with the Microsoft and Apple stuff. I mean, in some sense, this is all design and like, how do we make it easier for people to build cool things? And I think that's actually happening lately. So a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, I think it's also the first time we had fighting burnout, but it kind of like a health.
Oh, that was a great talk.
Person. Like we had Alicia Sidlock delivered a talk about, fighting burnout, and this is like the first time we've had someone talk about that, like not talk about code or management or philosophies or something, it was just talk about like, hey, just burnout in general. And so I think that was kind of epic. She actually won best of for her talk. Oh, nice. During that one. So I thought that was kind of unusual and special in a way. And it's also, I think she was one of the first people to win two best ofs, because she won for 2014 and
Yeah, 2014 was about like JavaScript testing, and then this year was about burnout. So it's quite a difference,
right? And so,
is that Alicia
Sedlock?
Yeah, and so she's and just for people who don't know, just like in order to get to speak at CSS DevConf, well, yeah, it's a good feature speaker. Like, you know, if you're a keynote, it's like a few number of people, just so we can like, you know, have some keynote people locked in, because they usually get picked up pretty early in the conference cycle. But then we have a call papers, and so, and that's a double blind voting, so we don't know who's going to be coming to our to the conference speaking until pretty much late in the game. And and both Alicia's talks were won, and so just for that to happen, that's one, speaks a lot. So hopefully she's in a really great position, because I think it speaks volumes to her communication skills. Is a phenomenal speaker, and I just really blown away that she picked that topic and did great. And so,
Audience was clearly sympathetic. I mean, I kind of told her, thank you for describing my past year. I should have taken more than 2 weeks between jobs, but that's okay. We've kind of reached a point where like the tech industry has been pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And we're kind of reaching the point where we can talk about how that's not always such a great thing to do. There are a lot of people who are still totally into pushing. I don't think that's going to change for a while, but at least the resistance is forming. So we'll see where that goes. But the conversations that triggered at the conference, it triggered a whole different set of kind of work and technology conversations than I'd felt like before that talk. So.
And I was just talking to someone earlier. Because we run CSS DevConf, so I'm like talking with one of our sponsors about it earlier today. And I didn't realize it, but over 3 nights and 2 days, we went to did the boat tour of San Antonio, of the Riverwalk, and then we did Day of the Dead celebration with a live mariachi band, all female mariachi band, face painting, tacos, whatever, like the whole thing. And then the next night we did historical reenactments at the Alamo. And so I don't think I think we did the San Antonio experience wrapped around a tech conference as much as you can. So I think we did a lot.
I'll admit that the fried chicken tacos might have had something to do with the superpowers.
Okay.
Great.
Those are the best tacos I've ever had. So.
Yeah, those trucks were great.
Yeah, and that's coming from a guy who lives in Austin, Texas, who has to, by definition, hate San Antonio. Cool. Next topic is CSS on resumes. Is that right? Or
yeah, this one comes out of the same thing. It's a little different from superpowers. So yeah. Like I realized over the last, well, really at the conference, it crystallized. You know, we've had people talk about, you know, so what are you good at? And what people put on the resume is CSS. And that doesn't actually tell you anything anymore. So like anybody who's out there who's like putting CSS on their resume, please put in more detail. Do you know layout? Do you know like how to deal with complex spreadsheets? If you're one of those crazy people who can do animations that Chris is going to need in a couple of years, you know, put it down. I'm trying to sort through like who knows what. And I'm at LinkedIn now, so it's kind of like resumes are a thing, I guess. Well, LinkedIn profiles are a thing. Forget resumes. But yeah, it's not one skill anymore. I think the same can probably be said of JavaScript too. I mean, I think that's harder to kind of break down because people think, well, you can talk about the language and then the frameworks, but there's a whole set of different skills that people are really specializing in. Part of me is sad about this because I liked it when these things were simple enough that we could just like say, yeah, I got CSS. I got it. I got all that. I know that. And that's not true anymore. But for the folks who are like specializing and doing really great work in layout or transforms, another place that people don't know, just like celebrate it, put it up in lights and you'll find more jobs. People need you.
I'm nodding my head aggressively because I appreciate the need for the specialization, and I love what why it's happening and how it's reflected on the web and the sites we're being able to build. But it's also why I'm changing career paths and going into podcast editing instead of
because
I just can't keep up with it. I mean, it's just running a solo shop. It's just like there's just so many hats to try and wear. And I like, but it's not in bitterness or negativity. It's just recognizing my own limitations in some of those areas that I just, it's just not, I can see the 5-year plan of me being buried under all these different requests of different things, like we're saying. And wanting to do them all and like acknowledging that they're all cool and good and really important for a modern website in 2020 or whatever. But yeah, recognizing that my brain isn't big enough to keep up maybe or small enough. I don't know, whichever way you want to look at it, but it's definitely exciting times. And it's interesting. It probably is good for folks to hear that they shouldn't necessarily be generalist as it maybe was in the past, but that specializing is going to serve them well, you know, right now, but also obviously, you know, a year or two down the road when animation is, we keep using that one, but whatever specialty it is within CSS even is going to serve them even more in a year or two when that becomes a bigger player. So
the animation is the one that feels more different than the rest.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. I just feel also like as someone who's grown up with the web, it's just like, I just feel like this need to be a generalist, and I just have to, I've learned to let go of that. I think it's the hardest part is like, there's so much, it's so complex now, 20 years plus going into it, that I just need to give up on that.
I'm not quite giving up on it. So like 5 or 6 years ago, I built an iPhone app with web stuff with Jen Robbins, and that was great. That got me back into the details. That got me well into the muck. There was even a little Objective-C involved, unfortunately. But anyway, what I'm trying to do now is figure out what like the simplest new stuff is that can possibly work. I think we talked last time I was on about like the flexible typography stuff I was playing with. And you know, it was great to have a talk at CSS DevConf where I was like, yeah, I knew that, which was awesome because it meant that I was not insane in what I had chosen to do. I'm going to be trying kind of the same thing with layout. And, you know, let's see what we can do with Flexbox and Grid and some kind of vaguely sane backup plan. I think there actually are paths into these things, but it's kind of a matter of like choosing sane projects. And too many people I'm talking with right now are like, man, we're building this app. We got to get all these things pixel perfect. We got to get these details done and we got to have it out last week. And I think in those kinds of cases, it's just like, never mind. I don't think we can help you. We'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be hard to stay a generalist, to stay a really good generalist. I'm going to be a bad generalist for a while, but maybe yeah. I can find points to get in.
Yeah. I feel like I still want to be a journalist in the sense that, I want to own my own printing press, right? I want to own my blog, you know, and, I think that's my limitation would be like, as long as I could, you know, that's what like Jim McKeith does, right? Like, I feel like I really love his ability to blog and then have his tweets be blog first and then go out to Twitter or his Facebook stuff. And I feel like that's like where it should go, really. It's like, and I'm not sure about blogging tweets is a thing I want to do, but basically the fact that you can do it is pretty awesome. But but that's where it goes, because I feel like, you know, I'm not big, you know, I love Twitter, but the fact that they have a crew of people who will evaluate hate speech on the service, who I don't know who they are, and I don't know what mood they're going to wake up in. Kind of just, if I say something stupid one day, I could be banned for life. I could be like, you know, so that kind of worries me. But the fact that I can fire up a WordPress blog and say my piece and not have to worry about some third party social media site taking me down speaks volumes. That speaks volumes, but I just feel it's very important to me. And so I feel like I should continue to do that at least. That's just the way I feel. America.
Yeah. I mean, keeping the web open is a lot of that. I think about a lot of the things I used to do with RSS that have now vanished into social networks. Yeah. How do we keep these things open and what does it take to do that? That's always been the hard question.
Right. And then also like those services, like we talked about this before, Simon, but like about closed social walled gardens and stuff like that. But like, you know, even though like Amazon Prime and Google will take your photos for free, you know, and store them, which is great. But then what do you do with your photos? Like, are you storing your photos? Are you, you know, my photos are in the cloud. So I hope it doesn't rain. That's all. ever-growing JavaScript stack.
Oh, yes. This actually ties into the CSS stuff. I mean, on the CSS side, I feel like there's this renaissance coming. On the JavaScript side, I see like this Jenga game that's getting really out of control. Yeah. There was a piece a couple weeks ago about like what it's like to be a JavaScript developer. That's really like a snarky piece that generated all kinds of like, this must not have been written by a real developer kind of responses. This week there was, you know, a piece about like how to set up for like modern JavaScript. And it's like 10 steps, but a friend of mine is on like step 6 an hour ago, and he had 8,332 files created as he was building his, you know, smooth JavaScript stack. And then I just watched like Alex Russell talking about mobile development and devices that will load your code when they feel like it. Yeah, it's kind of like JavaScript, a little dabble, do you? Is a piece I need to write. I've been looking up Brill Cream commercials. But yeah, I keep wondering, like with CSS, I feel like we're reaching the good kind of critical mass. And with JavaScript, I'm concerned we're reaching the bad kind of critical mass. So we'll see what happens.
This is where I update my Twitter profile to say I'm a bad generalist. I'm just, that's all I'm doing.
Excellent.
I'll pass it to you, Christopher.
Yeah, so like I was just reading this like JavaScript stack from scratch, and it's like, hey, welcome to my modern JavaScript stack tutorial, JavaScript stack from scratch. And so it was like, just like 12 steps. First one's Node, NPM, Yarn, package JSON, and then installing and using, and then ES6 with Babel and Gulp, and then the syntax, linting, client app with Webpack, React, Redux, JS, and so.
I did apologize to the friend who was implementing all of this.
Really? How'd you? Profusely, I hope, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, part of it's great because people are enthusiastic. You know, they're figuring out all these new things they can do. They're building all these great new tools.
Yeah.
Part of it's just like, whoa, let's invent things for like Google and Facebook and impose them on individual developers building sites, and that gets way out of hand fast. So,
yeah. So I built a website for 10K apart, a contest. And I kind of went into like an old school guy, and I made sure it was like the whole thing was 10K. And then I read the rules, and then, and then it said like, no, the initial download is 10K, but you can have a back end come in and do do more stuff. And I was just like, wait, what? That's cheating. That's not good. So I was really proud. I came under 10K. It did something that helps people. And I was like, okay.
It was a fart app, wasn't it?
It was a fart app. It was another fart app. So, but yeah, it's just, yeah. So I can see how that can be really extensive to go through 12 steps. And it's not even done yet. He still has to do write out production and development environments, express, React router, server-side rendering, styling, enzyme, holy cow. So
back when I was a kid, a router was something you had in like the network service place. And now it's everywhere on my laptop. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's everywhere. All right.
It sounds just like, to me, it sounds like an order at Starbucks is what, when you say all those things, that's what I hear.
So. I will be living in the bathroom for the next week. Okay. Next thing is Stranger Things Peanut Smashup.
Yeah. So this is where in my expertise, switching. I just saw this go by the other day and it's kind of like where I depending on when this gets released and edited, I guess, depending on your editor, however long he takes. But in gearing up for Christmas, and Peanuts have a special place in my heart anyways for Christmas time. And then, but also Stranger Things is oddly the Smash Netflix series anyways, is had a little bit of a holiday vibe to it, despite being about, you know, children dying and oddly enough. So this is a mashup of the two by an artist that I thought was just kind of like, I saw the little preview clip or whatever on Twitter where it was just like one particular scene, but it actually is a fully fleshed out 3-minute long anyways, cartoon with the Stranger Things kids in the Peanuts world. So worth checking out if you haven't seen it ever, but and enjoyed Stranger Things.
Yeah. I mean, like before Stranger Things, the biggest series on Netflix was Fuller House.
Really?
Yeah, Fuller House was like just the maximum. Like it's up here, and then because it's not offensive, it's, you know, it's except for the jokes, you know, depending on who you are. But
the original series, you mean, right?
Yeah, original series, right? Yeah. So Fuller House is up here, and then Stranger Things just came by and just like destroyed everything. So it's a phenomenon. It's really interesting. Which I enjoyed the series. I enjoyed the nostalgia of it, but I just felt like there's no soul to it, like, if you will. There's no like ET to it. There's no arch to it, there's archetype or whatever like that. It felt like just a bunch of stuff happening to people, and there's no like saving. There's no one.
The more lovable Demogorgon or whatever.
Yeah, no, it was like it could be unlovable for I hear. I was I just felt like there was no. I mean, season two we'll have it. We'll answer a lot of things that I found like season one missing, it was nice. It was a nice thing. And then this Peanuts thing is just priceless. This mashup is just excellent. Pitch perfect. I think it hits it so well. It's really well done. So
how do you watch a Netflix series? Are you binging it over a weekend as soon as it's released, or do you try and like sort of pace yourself?
That's a good, great question. Great question, Chris. I wish more people asked me that. It depends on the series. Like, I try to binge, because I am a one track person, which is my weakness and my strength is that if I'm on a project, I have to finish that project as soon as possible, which is great for editors, but who want me to get things done real fast. But it's also it's really bad because I can't really get anything else done. Like I can do other things, but it's just not gonna, I'm gonna be thinking about this other thing. So I usually try to binge watch and get it done as soon as possible. The exception has been recently. Was the Luke Cage Netflix series? Was that the Luke Cage was so well done? I enjoyed every episode of that. We actually just took time and just set some time to watch it. And like, you know, when we had a free time to not be disturbed by anything else, we just watch it because the soundtrack is beautiful, the cinematography is beautiful. The plot was way better than Daredevil season two by a mile. And I really liked what they did with the character arches. Like, I felt like, you know, you compare Stranger Things with the character development, which is totally unfair, and you should not do that whatsoever with the Luke Cage character development. I just felt like there was more development with the characters in the Luke Cage series than if you would in Stranger Things. So usually I just try to binge things if that's your, I don't know if that's a point you have. I don't know
your point. Yeah, no, I'm just curious. It's you know, because we're talking about a TV show right now, but you know, obviously there's the conversation of things being lost in terms of you know, using say Lost, where the show is released, everybody can talk about an episode for a week, and then we watch the next one and we whatever. And whereas, you know, all this kind of like, don't spoil it for me because I haven't binged yet, whereas Christopher's binged already and things like that. And so, and whatever, it is what it is. Obviously, streaming is going to be is the way forward, and the Netflix model seems to be the way that we're going to be going anyways for a while. I was just curious what.
Well, I think you'll see. What's really disappointing to me right now in terms of TV is that you add this one interface to the TV, right? Which beamed like, you know, these waves of TV broadcast into your TV, black and white, now color, and everyone watched TV the same way, right? And now you have streaming, you have the internet, just disrupting everything. Totally cool, whatever, life happens. But now my TV, in order to view the channel, I've cut the cord, but in order to watch like college football fan, but for me to watch college football, I had to pay a service, you know, X amount of money per week. I had to go install apps on my smart TVs. I don't own any smart TVs because my TVs are old, so I had to go and jigger rig things around with like a Chrome TV or a Fire Stick from Amazon or an app for my tablets and stuff like that. And that's just working one channel. But if I want another channel, I had to go track it down, figure where it's located, and go up there. And so, from having limited choices but one dial for my TV to having so many choices and not being and having to track down, I am pretty okay tracking things down. But for the common person who doesn't want that, that's going to be kind of just super annoying, right? And then also on top of that, Netflix allows you for binging, but not many other services are going to allow that. Like Hulu releases TV shows, but it's one per week in terms of them releasing their own content. And then, but I told you, like I can tell you, like, my favorite waiting for a Doctor Who episode was like 7 years, 6 years ago. This is probably the greatest Doctor Who modern story ever. It was a two-parter. I totally get what you're saying about, I can't wait till the next week when the new episode drops and I get to see Doctor Who. Episode. And it was such a great story. So awesome. That's pretty much what I thought about the whole entire week as a big nerd. I was like, oh, this, I can't wait for the story to pan out. And it was such a terrible story. And it was so bad. I was like, you set it up so well. This horror-like type of Doctor Who story. You set up so well, and then you pulled it out with just this terrible solution. It was so bad. But so I don't really mind like binging. Because of that, and I feel like
it's not worth the disappointment, the potential disappointment.
Yeah, I hate being disappointed in my binging.
Well, your description of setting up the TVs reminded me way too much of the JavaScript conversation we just had. It's getting like
generalist specialist in terms of TV configuration.
It was nice when we went from the dial on the TV to the remote control, but maybe now we've gone too far. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like I have like 20 million controls, and I have to fine tune each one, and now I need. Automation to
and passwords
for controls. So, yeah. And then I have to write this all down in my will.
Oh jeez,
because I get hit by a bus. So
no one will know how to make the TV set work. That's terrible.
No one makes TV work. I know. That's how we talk around here too. By the way, just like, no one makes TV work. Yeah. Oh man, cool. Speaking of TV, our last topic for today. Unless we talk about something else. Is anyone here a Walking Dead fan?
I've held off on getting into it. I appreciate the enthusiasm in the world for it, and I can understand being addicted to a TV show. I'm very familiar with that feeling, but that's one I've avoided, not for any real reason other than just my list is full. Well, I have kids in the house too, so little kids. So it's,
oh yeah, yeah, it's I totally understand. Like, but this is there's some talk this week about the show being too violent and people stopping. Because the cliffhanger was revealed, and if you've read the comic books, you know what was going to happen because of The Walking Dead. But I just decided not to watch it anymore, just because it was just too violent. I just feel like it was being manipulative in terms of what was going on, and I don't want that. Like I said before, like one track mind. I think about the shows. Over a week, and I just don't want that carried that kind of negativity or that sense of dread, if you will, of the characters that I've been following for so long, just to be carrying over the week. I have a lot of other stuff to do with my life, so I don't want to be filled with that. Sure. And so that goes with like, but as soon as the series is over, the season's over, I might binge watch it just right. So I can get out of my system.
Yeah.
What's going on. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, because I remember a similar thing happening periodically with, say, I watched Game of Thrones, and yeah. A similar thing where it'd be like all of a sudden, and I'm delayed watching because of reasons. So I'm seeing like this fur over and this anger, like, oh, I'm never watching this thing again. And because of this or that, and all things that were justifiable reasons to stop watching a television series. But then it seemed like the next week, all those people were back talking about the show again. So it felt, I don't know if this is the same thing on the same kind of level with Walking Dead, where it's like, oh, this is terrible. I'm never watching the show again. And then, you know, on Sunday night next week or whenever it comes out, they're going to be like popcorn and drink in hand, ready to watch just to see. Maybe it'll be better this time.
Yeah, well, I read the comic books to a certain point, and so like the amount of like pain that they're in does not let up at any point. So it's like so there was a point where like I just got like spoiler alert. They came across cannibals, and they were in some deep trouble. And so they were in a cliffhanger, and the cliffhanger was really kind of interesting. Also, they had a character from Star Trek Next Generation playing part of the evil people, so it wasn't that bad. Like, hey, I know that person. I'll watch what she's in. So, they resolved that within like one episode of coming back. So it went from me like, oh, I might not be watching it, to they resolved it pretty quick. So if they come back and resolve it next episode, I might be back on board, but that'd be a very disservice to the fans to resolve this major plot point that they're in right now. So within one episode. So I don't see them happening to do that.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, talking about like violence and like binge watching. Cause I don't really object to violence in entertainment. The last thing I binge watched was The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there was plenty of violence. There was plenty of manipulation. There were creative cliffhangers. I think maybe handled a little more smoothly actually than most of what I've heard lately about The Walking Dead, but because I didn't watch it when I had to wait a week between episodes, like my relationship to it was totally different.
Right.
And I also, because I was watching it old style Netflix off DVDs, you know, I basically had complete control of the whole right. experience in a way. I mean, with streaming, you have control, but with DVDs, well, you can always smash the DVD if you want. It's kind of cool. They would want money for that. But anyway, I just keep feeling like the way we relate to shows is changing. Like, I think part of it is that TV has actually gotten better the last few years. Mm-hmm. But I just marvel at how deeply into it people are on a daily basis. It's grown way more powerful than it was even in, you know, I don't know. I remember talking about the golden age of television was the 70s. And I'm like, no, not so much. I do have the MASH, you know, Foot Locker box of DVDs and that kind of thing. And I can sing the song from All in the Family, but, the intensity of the relationship, even when, you know, not everybody's watching the same thing, when some people are binge watching, some people are watching it week by week, it's just astonishing to watch how deep it goes.
Yeah. And it, conversely too, on the flip side of it, I guess, is like on the creative side, like when you're making a show too, like I remember Lost as a series, they definitely were ahead of the schedule of the releases, obviously not making it that week or anything like that, but they weren't finished the season when that season had already started airing. And so mm-hmm. it was, you know, on the creative side, I don't know how it all works these days, but you know, there would have been potential for them to adjust plot points based on audience reaction. Whereas, yeah, like a series that's just dropped on Netflix, obviously there's no redo, there's no updates or version 2 or bug fixes or whatever as you were. It's interesting that just how that side of the whole TV media experience is obviously changing as well, or could be changing, I guess. I'm not in that industry, so I don't know for sure, but you're back.
Yes, I had UPS. I had to sign for it. So,
ooh, exciting!
I'm debating whether it was the Peanuts Christmas box set or the Stranger Things box set.
Oh, it was actually the MASH locker set. It was kind of weird.
Oh, really good!
You Amazon primed it as soon as he said.
Yeah, I was like, "Wow, can you get that here?"
Wow, same 10-minute delivery now. They've gotten good.
Amazon Prime. I'll pay the $5. Can you get here? Can you get here now? So we're talk about pixelation for old TV shows, or
I was just saying how my kids don't really complain when we watch, say, Peanuts Christmas or whatever, about, like, it's on an HDTV, but it's obviously pixely and stuff. They haven't updated it, I hope. and they don't really complain or notice or say anything. But
I mean, mine love, like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which, you know, you look at it from the perspective of today's animation, is really just, whoa, what were they thinking?
Same, like the Frosty the Snowman one, I think is similar too, where it's like that sort of weird animation-y stuff, but looks really bad on,
right,
on TV. But yeah.
But somehow it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been trying, I never was able to watch Robotech growing up. Where I was raised, it was like this, like, we had to go travel to someone's house in another state and we could watch maybe a Robotech episode or something like that. And to me, it was always this futuristic looking great TV show, you know, anime, whatever. And I was just like, oh, one day I would love to watch it. And so now it's on, you know, Netflix or Hulu or whatever. And I had this big HD TV and it's stretched out and it doesn't look that great. And I just, like, it's part of the childhood just, like, died. It's just like, oh man, if they actually made it like twice as big, it might be, you know, but why would they have, like, cause the resolutions they didn't have to, but, you know, but yeah. Anyway, so that makes me, actually I've been researching a project. This is totally boring to everyone else, but the research project were to broadcast TV signals locally and get an old TV and just see how the TV signals look locally. So that way you just, like, so you don't have to, like, stream an internet TV or whatever
like that. Pirate radio TV.
My own pirate TV. Is it pirate if it's just for you? I don't understand. I don't know. So, but yeah, just because, like, because I remember this project where this guy who collects old TVs, but there's no way he can connect, like, plug into old TVs because they weren't designed for, you know, plugs in the back. They just were designed for channel surfing. And so, but he wanted to watch, like, modern TV shows on his old TVs. And so he actually had to come up with a system of broadcasting RF signals to his TVs. So I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet. So I'm going to try to do that at some point when I'm retired. I don't know. Cool. That's about it for us. Is any other closing thoughts or words? Or
no, I think that's good for me. That's a lot of words on things I understand and things I don't. So I've used my limit up.
Okay. Cool. All right, Simon.
The world just keeps moving really fast, so I'm just trying to keep up.
All right. Cool. So where can people find you online, Chris?
I'm iChris on Twitter, and chrisens.com is where I blogged back when I remembered how to use WordPress.
Simon?
I'm Simon St. L, SimonStl on Twitter, and SimonStl.com, where I was until my RSS feeds all broke. But yes, you can still find me there.
Well, we should also say, like, the last time you were on here, you were working for a previous company, and then
yes,
you have a new job at lynda.com, but then right, lynda.com got bought by linked.com.
Right. Well, LinkedIn bought them like 2 years ago, so I'm showing up late for that party. But now LinkedIn, in theory, if everything goes smoothly, will become part of Microsoft by the end of the year.
Okay, gotcha.
Hence all of my disclaimers and such.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So
we won't be able to complain about Skype anymore.
You can complain about Skype all you want. It's good.
Good. Dodge a bullet there. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks, guys, for being on the show, and appreciate it.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.